Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another Monday episode of the Council of Trent podcast. I am your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And today I want to focus on an article in the New York Times that people started sending to me while I was on vacation. And I knew I would address it soon on the podcast. And well, here we are. So the article is entitled, "It is not a closet, it is a cage. Gay Catholic priests speak out." Article in the New York Times with the subtitle, "The crisis over sexuality in the Catholic Church goes beyond abuse. It goes to the heart of the priesthood, into a closet that is trapping thousands of men." So you can start to see where the article is going already. But I wanted to go through the majority of the article today and show some of the assumptions and the distortions in pieces like this that are subtly used to kind of push us in a direction of changing church teaching on sexual morality, on the morality of homosexual acts, or really the term sodomy would be more appropriate for acts that are outside, taking sexuality out of the marital act entirely. But people don't want to come full front and say that, at least not priests and other people within the church. But you see these kind of subtle things in pieces like this and how it kind of nudges it in that direction. So let's go through that. But just as a reminder, I want to give a special thanks to everyone who's supporting the Council of Trent podcast at TrentHornPodcast.com. I'm going to be recording this week a new series I think you guys are going to be really excited about. Eventually, I'm going to do a Bible study series, but I just wrote some scripts today for a catechism study series. My goal is to take our podcast subscribers, our faithful patrons, keep the podcast going. I will walk you through the entire catechism with short 2 to 3 minute videos explaining it and eventually putting that together into something for you all to help you study the deposit of faith. So I'm very excited about this. If you would like to be able to see my catechism study and eventually my Bible study, it'll be available for subscribers at TrentHornPodcast.com. So for as little as $5 a month, you can help the podcast grow, reach other people, and get access to bonus articles, bonus episodes, exclusive content, and the new catechism study and scripture study that is going to be coming online here this week. So do check that out over at TrentHornPodcast.com if you do have time. So now let us jump into the heart of the matter of this New York Times article. So the article is by Elizabeth Diaz, and it has some photos also of priests. Some, their identities are obscured to kind of hide their identity, but others have said, yeah, I'm a gay priest, and I'm not happy about the way the church has been treating us. So you see where the article goes. So I want to go down first. We'll start with the introduction. Gregory Greiton was 17 years old when the priests organized the game. It was 1982, and he was on a retreat with his classmates from St. Lawrence, a Roman Catholic seminary for teenage boys training to become priests. Leaders asked each boy to rank which he would rather be: burned over 90% of his body, paraplegic, or gay. Each chose to be scorched or paralyzed. Not one uttered the word gay. They called the game of life. Okay, now when I played the game of life, I just remember choosing whether to go to college or not at the beginning. You spin the spinner, and then it's basically chance after that point. Once again, and I'm going to talk about a column that Bishop Thomas J. Olmsted from the Diocese of Phoenix wrote in the Catholic Sun about priestly formation. This is indicative probably of some aspects of poor priestly formation. I did youth ministry. I wouldn't start off with a game like this with young people. You know, I would be sensitive and compassionate because there may be some there who have same-sex attractions that they're struggling with. And so this is an indictment of poor catechesis, youth ministry, and priestly formation, not on the teaching of the church. So let's scroll down. The lesson stuck. 7 years later, he climbed up into his seminary dorm window, dangled one leg over the edge. "I really am gay." Father Greiton, now a priest near Milwaukee, remembered telling himself for the first time. It was like a death sentence. Later on, there's a quote from Father Greiton later in the article, but now I think he talks about later how he got down from the ledge because a fellow seminarian he knew was gay, and lots of other seminarians are gay. So it's not really this isolating cage people are making it out to be. And so a year or two ago, he quote unquote came out to his parishioners in a homily. And this was in disobedience to the archbishop, what he told him not to do. And so he's tried to come out to be, you know, a model of supposedly chaste behavior as an openly gay priest, but it starts sending really weird mixed messages about the what the church teaches related to the issue of homosexuality, as you'll see in a pull quote in the article when we scroll down more. So that's kind of the intro story. Let's go on with more of what the article says. The closet of the Roman Catholic Church hinges on an impossible contradiction. For years, church leaders have driven gay congregants away in shame and insisted that homosexual tendencies are disordered, and yet thousands of the church's priests are gay. First, I've never attended a church where I felt that self-identified gay or lesbian congregants have been driven away. Usually, priests, I can't really remember the last time I heard a priest mention homosexuality or same-sex behavior in a homily. I can't remember it at all. So, and if you look, if you go to the website of New Ways Ministry, which is a dissident organization that is pushing for the church to change its teachings on homosexuality, New Ways Ministry has a list of quote-unquote gay-friendly parishes in the United States. And it's a fairly lengthy list where you can find places where quote-unquote, you know, same-sex ministry, things like that are LGBT communities. You find those in many churches throughout the United States. So I don't know, you know, and even the language being used here saying quote unquote is disordered. I mean, that's pretty low on the bar when it comes to, it's not a slur. It's not hateful language. It's acknowledging a biological fact about our sexuality, which is either ordered towards conjugal love between men and women, what our reproductive organs are for, or not. One, it's either ordered correctly or it's disordered. So let's continue. The stories of gay priests are unspoken, veiled from the outside world, known only to one another if they are known at all. Fewer than about 10 priests in the United States have dared to come out publicly. But gay men probably make up at least 30 to 40% of the American Catholic clergy, according to dozens of estimates from gay priests themselves and researchers. Some priests say the number is closer to 75%. One priest in Wisconsin said he assumed every priest was gay, unless he knew for a fact he is not. A priest in Florida put it this way: a third are gay, a third are straight, and a third don't know what the hell they are. Well, first, it doesn't really matter what, in one sense, it doesn't matter what percentage of the clergy identify as gay, as straight, or quote unquote don't know what the hell they are, because 100% of them did make a vow of celibacy, a vow to remain unmarried, and a vow to obey the church's teachings, which include teachings on chastity. So if you are unmarried, you cannot have sexual relations because there's no marital bond for that to take place. So whether you're a priest who's attracted to women or a priest who's attracted to men, whoever you are, you took a vow, you made a vow before God, before your bishop, before the church, to say you would live according to the church's teachings and to take a vow of celibacy, to not marry. And included within that would be not engaging in sexual activity outside of marriage. So the idea of saying that the church's teachings on, it's not the church's teaching on homosexuality that creates a quote unquote cage for clergy who identify as being gay. It's not the teaching on homosexuality. It's the discipline on celibacy, which applies equally to priests who are attracted to women and priests who are attracted to men. So no one's making a big article saying, oh no, priests, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of priests who struggle with their sexual attractions to women who think, oh, maybe I should get married. But there's no New York Times article about that. They're not living in a cage. They took a vow. They made a promise. And so whoever you are, whatever your sexual attractions are, you should be expected to live according to the vows that you made to God, the bishop, and to the church, and to all of us to be pastors to serve us. So the article continues, two dozen gay priests and seminarians from 13 states shared intimate details of their lives in the Catholic closet with the New York Times over the past 2 months. They were interviewed in their churches before Mass, from art museums on the weekend, in their apartments decorated with rainbow neon lights, and between classes at seminary. Okay, I got to stop you right there. That's indicative right there that if you are a priest and you treat, you know, it's one thing to have same-sex attractions or opposite-sex attractions, and to recognize these are either ordered or disordered desires that can hinder your ability to exercise your priestly ministry. It's one thing to understand those desires can be a hindrance and to focus them in some kind of a healthy way, but it's quite another to celebrate these desires and blame mean old Catholic Church for not letting you live them out. If you don't buy what you're selling, stop selling it. If you don't buy what you're selling, stop selling it. If you think homosexuality, there's nothing wrong with it. If you think it's great, if you decorate your apartment with neon rainbow lights and you want to celebrate all of this and you're mad at the church, go. It's not a cage. There's no lock. You're free to leave. It's hypocritical for you to be selling to everyone else what you're not buying at all. Some agreed to be photographed if their identities were concealed. Almost all of them required strict confidentiality to speak without fear of retribution from their bishops or superiors. A few had been expressly forbidden to come out or even to speak about homosexuality. Most are in active ministry and could lose more than their jobs if they are outed. The church almost always controls a priest's housing, health insurance, and retirement pension. He could lose all three if his bishop finds his sexuality disqualifying, even if he is faithful to his vows of celibacy. Now, here's what the article gets wrong. It's not that a bishop would find your sexuality disqualifying that would get you fired from the priesthood. I've never heard of a bishop dismissing someone from the clerical state just because they discovered this person has same-sex attractions. I've never heard of that. But it's not your sexuality. It's a question of your obedience to the bishop. If the bishop tells you, I don't want you talking about your sexuality to your parishioners, I don't want you sharing your inner struggles with them, you're supposed to be a leader, a pastor, a spiritual father to them, it's inappropriate for you to share these things and kind of wallow in what my colleague Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse calls weaponized self-pity, make people feel bad about you and subtly doubt church teaching in the way. If your bishop tells you to do that and you don't do that, if you violate what the bishop says, guess what? He's your boss. If I don't do what my boss says, I can get in trouble at work. If I really royally mess up and disobey my boss repeatedly or something very serious, I could be fired. That's what everyone deals with if you disobey your boss. So the idea here, you could lose your housing, health insurance, retirement pension. That's anybody who has a job. Once again, if you don't want the job anymore, leave, quit. Yeah, it's hard, but it's better than being a hypocrite or a liar to everybody. My wife has a great analogy to this. I mean, if you think about it, there's a statistic, it's not entirely true, but for the sake of simplicity, we'll put it out here, that, you know, 50% of marriages end in divorce, but you rarely hear about priests leaving the priesthood. And she said that for some of them, if they don't believe anymore, they just go through the motions. They go through the motions, and then, you know, they've got housing, they've got a cushy job, they got people who look up to them, that a priest who doesn't believe the church's teachings or obey them anymore, but still remains in the church as a priest, it's sort of like being married to a woman who doesn't mind that you're cheating on her. That, well, she's not going to raise a fuss, so why bother being faithful? Because she's not going to kick me out. I can have it both ways. So it's selfish and it's cowardly for someone who completely rejects the church's teachings to stay in the church, to basically lie to everybody so that you can receive a paycheck and get your housing stipend and have everything taken care of. And honestly, it's a danger to people's souls because even if you're trying to pretend, if you don't really believe this stuff, you're not going to preach forcefully when it's required. You're not going to call people to repentance when it's necessary in the sacrament of confession. You're putting other people's souls in danger. Don't drag down other people's souls with yours if you're choosing to give up. Now, that does not mean, and I'm going to talk about this later in the episode, that someone who identify a priest who has same-sex attractions has got to go or get the boot. That's not what I'm saying. But those priests, whether they are attracted to women or attracted to men, if they've just given up entirely and they're dead on the inside and they don't believe this stuff anymore, they're a spiritual threat to themselves, obviously, but they're a spiritual threat to others. And for the good of the body of Christ, they should ask their bishop to be dismissed from the clerical state, even if that is a difficult thing to do to transition into a new career, to start a new path in life. You should still always, no matter what, you should do good and avoid evil. It's the most basic principle of moral theology. So the environment, the article says, the environment for gay priests has grown only more dangerous. The fall of Theodore E. McCarrick, the once powerful cardinal who was defrocked last week for sexual abuse of boys and young men, has inflamed accusations that homosexuality is to blame for the church's resurgent abuse crisis. Now, I find it interesting, though, the article, the author here doesn't commend the church for taking action against someone who abused adults and children, even though it was grossly overdue to take action. There's no commendation of that at all. Instead, it's, oh, well, what's happening with McCarrick shows that it's going to inflame accusations of homosexuality being to blame for the abuse crisis. Well, homosexual behavior, same-sex attraction, especially identifying as being gay, does have something to do with priests who choose to have sexual relationships with other priests and with seminarians. It's quite obvious there. Where people are disputing it is whether it has a role to play in their attraction to children, which we'll get here to in a second. Studies repeatedly find there to be no connection between being gay and abusing children. All right, so let's get to the heart of the matter where people end up disagreeing. And yet prominent bishops have singled out gay priests as the root of the problem. And right-wing media organizations attack what they have called the church's homosexual subculture, Lavender Mafia, or gay cabal. Wait a minute here, one sec. So the idea here of having this in quotation marks, I get that's what some people have been saying, things like homosexual subculture, Lavender Mafia, gay cabal. The way the Times is writing it here makes it seem like that this is some kind of hysterical product of a fevered anti-gay imagination. That, you know, oh, you know, conservatives and prominent bishops are saying that gay priests are the problem. They're part of this gay cabal. They're part of this homosexual subculture, as if, you know, there's just kind of hysteria talking about this kind of gay conspiracy within the church. But the article itself undermines the claim that the idea of a homosexual subculture is an exaggeration. That's not the case. So the article itself says that 30 to 75% of priests are gay. We don't know the exact number. I've seen low end 16%, high end 75%, but it's definitely higher in the priesthood than it is in the general population. There's no doubt about that. So if there's that high percentage in the priesthood, at least at 30%, there's going to be a subculture. And the fact, look at what happened with McCarrick. He became a cardinal. People were covering for him. He had power. People couldn't stand up against him. It took a long time for him to be dismissed from the clerical state for the crimes he committed. That is proof in the pudding that there's a gay cabal. I mean, it's right here. You've got power people who have same-sex attraction, who have achieved positions of power, who then look the other way when they see fellow priests and bishops and even cardinals who act out in disordered and sexually immoral ways. It's beyond any reasonable doubt now. This is not any kind of fevered hysteria. This is just a fact the church has to grapple with and has to continue to grow and seek reconciliation with God and seek a growth in holiness within all of her members, both lay and clergy. Let's see. Oh, well, let me talk about the studies, actually. So before I go down a little bit, let's talk about the studies. Now, the studies aren't linked here in the New York Times article, but most people, when they say there's no connection between having same-sex attractions and child sexual abuse within the Catholic Church, will point to the John Jay Report. And I think one of the authors of the John Jay Report said in 2009, quote, "We do not find a connection between homosexual identity and the increased likelihood of subsequent abuse from the data that we have right now." Now, when I've looked at all the data, I think it's not as simple to say the reason the church is experiencing an abuse crisis is because there are priests who have same-sex attraction. That is far too simplistic of an explanation, because there are multiple factors that need to be brought into play to explain the data. And I think Rod Dreher has come to the same conclusion. He writes on this. He says it's extreme to say you can blame everything on homosexuality or it has nothing to do with it. They're two extreme views. But there is an important element here. And the John Jay Report tries to get around this, and he uses what I call weasel words to try to put forward conclusions that don't have any evidence behind them. For example, here's some excerpts from the report, what it says. "What is not well understood is that it is possible for a person to participate in a same-sex act without assuming or recognizing an identity as a homosexual. More than three-quarters of the acts of sexual abuse of youths by Catholic priests, as shown in the Nature and Scope study, were same-sex acts, priests abusing male victims. It is therefore possible that," note the weasel word here, "although the victims of priests were most often male, thus defining the acts as homosexual, the priest did not at any time recognize his identity as homosexual." Well, some people can fail to recognize their own identity, but that doesn't change the fact of what their identity is. It is therefore possible that, I mean, yeah, when I was 22 years old, it is therefore possible that Martians are the one that stole my fold-up collapsible bike at Arizona State University when I went to my ancient Greek class. I mean, it's within the realm of possibility, but just because something's possible doesn't mean that it's probable or even likely. So when the report goes on, here's another case of something that's undermined in the report. The John Jay report, now this is the most comprehensive report on child sexual abuse in the Catholic Church from 1950 to 2002. The report says, that, so the idea that homosexuality has nothing to do with this is undermined by the report itself. It says, priests who identified themselves at the time of treatment for their sexual disorders as gay, homosexual, bisexual, or confused were more likely to have post-ordination sexual behavior than those who considered themselves to be heterosexual. Though the non-heterosexual priests were more likely to participate in sexual behavior with adults than with minors. So I was trying to say here as well, it is true that people who act out were more likely to identify as gay or bisexual. But hey, at least they're doing it with adults, right? Not on the, you know, they're, however, later in the report, it says that those, it talks about their attitudes towards homosexuality. Those with positive views towards homosexuality are more likely to act out sexually. Those with negative views, it says, are more likely, but it's almost insignificantly likely to act out with children, even though they have a negative view of homosexuality. Well, I'll talk about the Solon's report here in a minute. So what the John Jay report shows and what other people are trying to say that, you know, there's no connection here. That is just not the case, that homosexuality has nothing to do with it. It's not the whole thing, but it certainly is a part of it. So there was another report that came out. Well, it was a study done, I think it was by Father Paul Sullins. Father Sullins did a report. He's associated with the Ruth Institute. That's where Jennifer Roback Mortz is associated. I love the work that they do. So he did a study on clergy sexual abuse since 2002, looking at data that even the John Jay report did not look at, to try to see, is there some kind of connection between those who have homosexual inclinations and the abuse of children within the Catholic faith? So this is an excerpt from the Solon's report I want to read to you at length, because I think it's very eye-opening. I examined the data on clergy sexual orientation to determine directly whether or not, in their words, of critics saying, an increase in homosexual men in the priesthood will lead to an increase in the abuse of boys. So does the presence of priests who identify as gay lead to an increase of child sexual abuse? This is what Sullins found. The share of homosexual American priests over time was estimated from a 2002 nationwide survey by the Los Angeles Times newspaper that included questions about sexual orientation, age, and year of ordination. Abuse was measured by reports from Catholic dioceses, the same data used in the John Jay report. I looked only at allegations of current abuse and statistically adjusted the findings to eliminate differences due to the age of abuser and year of abuse. My findings showed that the increase or decrease in the percent of male victims correlated almost perfectly with the increase or decrease of homosexual men in the priesthood. And so at the end of this, he says, prior to the 1950s, the proportion of homosexual men in the priesthood was about the same as in the general population. By the 1980s, homosexual men made up over 16% of the presbyterate, which is over 8 times that of the general population. That increased presence of homosexual priests has been accompanied by an increase of about 24 additional incidents of currently reported abuse per year. Let's go back to the New York Times article. So it says, even Pope Francis has grown more critical in recent months. He has called homosexuality fashionable, recommended that men with this, quote, deep-seated tendency not be accepted for ministry, and admonished gay priests to be perfectly responsible, trying to never create scandal. Now, it's interesting that they talk about Pope Francis saying this. The words deep-seated tendency not being acceptable for the priesthood comes from a 2005 document from the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, specifically saying that men with deep-seated attractions or those who think homosexuality is a positive thing should not be admitted to the priesthood. One reason for this is that they have psychological brokenness. They have wounds that they're trying to work through. You have to be psychologically healthy to be a priest, to be able to minister to other people. And if you're struggling with being able to relate to other men in a healthy way and women in a healthy way, then you're not going to be able to carry out your ministry in the healthiest way possible. So priests that have very negative psychological afflictions, like alcoholism, for example, should not be admitted to the priesthood. You know, you can't, just as you can't have a priest, someone who struggles with alcohol shouldn't be around wine every day. Somebody who struggles with the attraction to have sex with other men should not live and work in close quarters with other men. It's the same reason that I don't live at a sorority, that I don't live in a convent. Because, well, one, I'm a married man, so that would put me in the doghouse forever. But even if I were single, it would be a very imprudent near occasion of sin. I should not be in these particular situations given the attractions that I have. So also when you look at the Solon's report and just the data in general, 81% of the acts that took place in abuse from 1950 to 2002 involved priests abusing young men. Only a fraction of those, however, were classic pedophilia, you know, under the age of 8 years old. The vast majority of abuse involved men, and they were usually, I think, from the age of 25 to 40. So men who are older, but not senior citizens. So older men, but from 25 to 40, having relations with boys from age 12 to 18. That's not pedophilia. It's not attraction to the prepubescent. It is attraction to postpubescent boys. It is ephebophilia. It is a disordered way of seeing adulthood in someone who is near to being an adult and sexually abusing them in that way. So why is this the case? Why should we be concerned about those of same-sex attraction in the priesthood, especially those who might act out in this way, especially those who might act out in this way? Well, I think a lot of it comes from the fact that it's simple, that sin begets sin. You know, where does this abuse happen? If you have people who are already unstable, were admitted to the priesthood when they should not have been, and they engage in improper relationships with other seminarians, with other priests, that will break down their barriers. And then the next step will be vulnerable laity, other adults, or vulnerable children, vulnerable teens that resemble adults to them in many ways. And because their judgment is so clouded by sin and they've given fully into these desires, they end up acting out and gravely hurting people, causing massive harm to them. So we have, well, you know what? I might go a little bit longer today because I can. And this is an important topic that we need to discuss. Let's go forward here with the article a little bit more. So this is a picture of Father Greg Greiton, the priest who came out in Milwaukee. And his pull quote for this article says, "It really never was my shame. It was the church's shame. They're the ones that should have the shame for what they have done to myself and many, many other LGBT people." So Father Greiton claims he's trying to be a model for how you can identify as gay and you can live out your vocation and still be celibate. And yet he doesn't pull any punches. He doesn't treat homosexuality as some kind of cross to bear or something to mourn, having a disordered desire to mourn that God has given you a cross through which his grace can be glorified by not giving in to disordered desires and being able to love and serve others. No, instead, it's the church that should be ashamed for treating disordered sexuality as something very serious and damaging to our souls. So the article goes on to say, "This is my life," a parish priest in the Northeast said. "You feel like everyone is on a witch hunt now for things you've never done. Just a few years ago, this shift was almost unimaginable when Pope Francis uttered his revolutionary question, 'Who am I to judge?'" Well, let's go on here. Here's the quote I find fascinating. "The vast majority of priests are not safe," said Father Bub Bussin, a priest in Park City, Utah, who was outed 12 years ago after he held Mass for the LGBTQ community. "Life in the closet is worse than scapegoating. It is not a closet. It is a cage." Well, once again, if the majority of priests are gay, then what kind of a cage is this? In fact, there are people, reports from the Vatican, saying this is a way for yourself to get promoted in other circles. Look at McCarrick. So how can that be the case? If it's a cage, it's a very well-populated one. And once again, that if you are flagrantly dissenting the church teaching and talk about sin in a positive light that distorts people's thinking and leads to scandal and leads to sin, Cage doesn't have any lock. You're free to leave. We're not saying that someone who struggles with same-sex attraction, who is a priest, ought to automatically get the boot, but people who are, through their ambiguities or even through their outright heresy, lead people into sin, they got to go. And people say, oh, well, it's not safe if you're a gay priest. Look at all the, go to New Ways and look at all the gay-friendly parishes in the United States. There, I've heard many priests give ambiguous homilies when it comes to same-sex attraction, and I've never seen them be disciplined. If anything, what's not safe is to be someone who will assertively stand for orthodoxy. I'll give you two examples. One is Father Paul Kalchick, who burned a gay flag that used to hang in a Catholic church, his Catholic church. He burned that flag, and then he's gone into hiding because he's afraid that Cardinal Supich is going to commit him to a mental institution. He's worried about retribution for burning a gay flag that used to hang in his church and was probably an object of scandal and sin. Another example, read the whole story on the National Catholic Register. It's fascinating. Father Edwin Dwyer of Saginaw, Michigan, his bishop removed him for being too traditional. What was his crime? From the Register, it says, Father Dwyer used incense and bells, a traditional black cassock, and Latin and Gregorian chant. Ooh, gotta get this guy out of here. He's going to overthrow the whole church. He did everything in accordance with the current general instruction of the Roman Missal for the Novus Ordo Mass. He just did the new Mass well. But a few liberal parishioners who've got a death hold of some of these parishes went and complained about him, and he got the boot, even though he said many young adults came back to the church because they loved Gregorian chant. Let's go down a little bit. I want to read this to you, because this where shows that it's not just about same-sex attraction that is the problem of abuse and clergy misconduct today. This is what the New York Times article says. Today, training for the priesthood in the United States usually starts in or after college. But until about 1980, the church often recruited boys to start in ninth grade. Teenagers still in the throes of puberty. For many of today's priests and bishops over 50, this environment limited healthy sexual development. Priests cannot marry, so sexuality from the start was about abstinence, and obedience. This is exactly right, that homosexuality plays a part in this, and that I believe, especially in the 1930s, 1920s, even up through the 50s and 60s, you had people who identified as gay. They didn't want to reveal that to others. They wanted to hide that fact, so they went to the church to be able to hide. They did not see the priesthood as a vocation. They saw it as a shield so no one would question their sexuality. And this was not properly screened out in seminary formation. You have people also who were sexually stunted, not taught about their sexuality. Sex is not spoken about at home. They're completely ignorant. Then they go to seminary and they start to act out because no one's keeping tabs on them or making sure they're a healthy individual, that they're just taught, you know, how to do the Mass, how to follow the rubrics. And poor priestly formation is a huge part of why we're dealing with the abuse crisis today. There is a great article by Bishop Thomas Olmsted I mentioned earlier in the Catholic Sun. I've got a quote here from it that I think summarizes well. Bishop Olmsted says why we have so many problems right now. This is what he says. We see clearly now that church leaders failed to adequately screen applicants for the priesthood during the confusion caused by the sexual revolution. In our seminaries, where young men are to be formed as true servants of Jesus and his church, it was often assumed that the human and the spiritual qualities of the man were present and sufficient. This was a poor assumption, and it led to too little consideration of a man's virtues and of his relationship with Jesus Christ. As a result, some candidates unfit for ministry were accepted. In the 1970s and 80s, especially, many seminaries were places of dissent from Orthodox teaching about scripture, theology, and especially sexual ethics. I was actually reading a book on celibacy in the 20th century, and it said there were debates in seminary classrooms about whether, technically speaking, sodomy between seminarians, sodomy between priests, violated the vow to celibacy. That they're trying to do this ridiculous hair splitting in theology to say, well, is it really a violation of the vow of celibacy if you engage in sexual behavior in seminary? And, you know, just some academics can delude themselves into trying to rational what, when sin has a death hold on you, a grip on you, You'll do anything you can to rationalize it. And seminaries, where people were talking, oh, get it out of your system here in seminary. It's fine. It's not a big deal. And this is what Bishop Olmsted is saying. For example, the masculine spousal dimension in which a priest is called to love as Christ loved his bride, the church, was not taught much at all. As a result, the priesthood was too frequently seen not as a life of masculine love, but merely pertaining to certain ministerial functions. The priesthood is a job where no one's going to find out you're gay. Sorry, that's my addendum to that. It's not using your masculine sexuality, your masculine nature, that the priests don't suppress the fact that they're men. The fact that they're men allows them to live out their priesthood in an amazing way, to be shepherds, to be spiritual fathers. Bishop Olmsted goes on to say, it was erroneously thought among some that the nature of the priesthood itself would change. Sadly, some seminaries became places with not only men who lacked a true calling from Jesus to the priesthood, but even where a homosexual subculture sprang up. It is difficult to deny this problem, considering the high percentage of abuse cases that occur between men and post-pubescent boys. So look, to summarize, I am not saying, people might try to misinterpret this in this podcast, I am not saying if a priest has same-sex attraction, they are an abuser or they're immediately in danger of abusing others. I'm not saying that. But discounting the danger of admitting people who have this strong attraction into an environment where it's not appropriate for them to be, where they're going to struggle, has led to many of the problems that we have now. And I think Bishop Olmsted hits the nail on the head when he talks about priestly formation as one aspect of why we're facing the abuse crisis that we're facing right now. But I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that any priest with same-sex attraction should get the boot. There's a great article in the National Catholic Register called Weaponized Self-Pity by Jennifer Roback Morse. And she talks about the issue of gay clergy. And she quotes Father Z, a popular blogger. He's a priest. And this is what he says about the issue of self-identified gay clergy. Do I, Father Z, want you guys to get out? Frankly, yes. If you are having sex with men, yes, get out. If you are striving to live a holy life and you are ordained, then get on with your priesthood and stop whining about it and stop rubbing it in people's faces. I sincerely believe that people with same-sex attraction, if they strive to be chaste and bear their subsequent suffering, will have a very high place in heaven. The greater the burden and suffering, the greater the graces and reward. Dr. Morse, at the end of that piece, actually has, well, here, I'll scroll down to it right here. She has a wonderful message for those who identify as having same-sex attraction. Let me bring over here, actually, my Word document that has it up here. That it's one thing to consider your same-sex attractions to be a thorn in your side, a cross to bear, and that through that you can glorify God by living a chaste and holy life. But to continually dwell on this as if this, what the Catechism says, is an intrinsically disordered desire, that people want to take this particular desire as something to celebrate. That's why we should not say there are LGBT Catholics, there are gay priests, because that your identity is not rooted in that. It's not rooted in being ordered away from God. Your identity is always rooted in being ordered towards God, who God is. That is what we should focus on. So I'm going to close with Dr. Moore says in the end of her piece, because I think it's very powerful. Let me close with a word to priests who are coming out now as gay. Fathers, telling us about your difficult life is not appropriate. It is unseemly for you to be complaining about yourselves when the rest of the church is trying to help the victims of clergy sex abuse. Ratcheting up the sad stories doesn't help one bit. Whatever problems you have in your life, face them with virtue and solve them. If you describe yourself as a celibate gay priest, I ask this question. Which word in that self-description is most important? Priest, celibate, or gay? Fathers, I'm not out to purge you from the priesthood. I have neither the authority nor the inclination to do so. I'm also not going to try to urge you to leave the priesthood on your own. I do not know enough about you to discern whether that is the path of holiness for you. But I will leave you with one thought as one adult human being to another. We are all surrounded by worldly forces tempting us to self-pity. Don't take the bait. It will not do you any good. It will hinder you from helping us, your people, and we need you. P.S. by the way, it's good advice for us when we want to wallow about our sins. We need you to be holy priests, first and foremost. We need you to be celibate and honor your vow of chastity. And way down the list of your self-understanding, our understanding of you and what the whole church needs from you, comes your identity as gay. We should not let our sexual attractions become our main source of identity. Our main source of identity is always as children of God, made in the image of God, who live a life of grace in Jesus Christ. And we know Christ's grace is enough. As St. Paul says in the letter to the Philippians, I can do all things in Christ, in Him who strengthens me. So let us pray. Pray for priests, whoever they are, whatever they're struggling with, that they will live out their priestly vocation, and pray for one another as well. Thanks for being with me here with me, guys, and I hope you have a blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.